Northshire Bookstore and Universal Preservation Hall are presenting an evening with number one New York Times bestselling author and two-time Pulitzer Prize winner Colson Whitehead tomorrow night at UPH in Saratoga Springs at 8 p.m. Whitehead will be discussing Cool Machine, the final installment of his Harlem trilogy, a vividly imagined portrait of 1980s New York, filled with daring heists, unforgettable characters, and the city's magnetic energy. Whitehead weaves history, crime, and imagination into a gripping story that critics are calling, quote, the literary equivalent of a great action movie and the greatest New York novel in years. It is a great pleasure to welcome Colson Whitehead to the roundtable this morning. Colson, thank you very much for being with us.
Very good.
It's really wonderful to have you. I was a fan. The first book I read of yours, and I became an immediate fan, was Zero One. And I just thought, well, there is a book that is just stunning. And nothing that you have written really since then has been, as far as subject matter, really that close. And that really tells us a lot about your writing career, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I do switch genres up a lot. Zone One was a zombie novel. I wrote a coming-of-age novel called Sag Harbor. Underground Railroad is a sort of fantastic historical novel. And now I'm doing this crime series. I think, like everyone else, you know, I like different kinds of stories. I like thrillers. I like dramas. I like science fiction. And the fun thing about my job is that I keep going and keep having new ideas. I can write these different genres that have inspired me and delighted me all these years.
I remember you saying at the time when we talked to you about Zero One that it was somewhat natural for you because you grew up on horror. You were a person within the Whitehead family. That was a genre that was very accepted.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I remember in seventh grade, we got our first Betamax. It was like 1982. And my brother and I would go to the video store and rent, five videos for the weekend. And it'd be classic horror like Dario Argento. It'd be John Carpenter. And then we'd throw in like Terms of Endearment or something. But yes, we were a horror-loving family. And, you know, reading Stephen King was really my introduction to reading sort of big books. I remember reading his collection, Night Shift, which is short stories. And then it was very daunting, so I would check the page numbers to see which one was the shortest story, like three pages, and I would go to the next longest story until finally I was reading, you know, the 40-page one.
Do you believe that he's somewhat, it's hard to say someone who is as famous as he is and as known as he is, that is often, I think, underrated for how great a writer he is.
Yeah, no, he's written definitely gory stories about vampires and werewolves, and also, you know, great novels and novellas that are realistic and, you know, so wholly realized and, you know, contain a lot of lovely writing. So he's done a lot of different things despite his, you know, main reputation as a horror writer.
What brought you to the crime genre? And I guess the crime genre in the sense of not only wanting to write the first book, but that it was going to be a trilogy.
Really just, you know, I talked about liking different kinds of stories. I love the heist genre, which is for me a film genre, not necessarily a novelistic genre. And I remember one day trying to think of what movie to watch. And I was like, Ocean's 11 again? How many times can I watch this movie? And just feeling jealous of Steven Soderbergh that he got to come up with a heist and these cool characters and, you know, these cool situations. So it was really just wanting to write a heist novel. And then I realized that I kept coming up with more and more stories. And so the novel became three different stories in one. And I'd written, I think, one half of the book. And I kept coming up with even more, so it became a trilogy. And I would just follow this guy over 30 years in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And each book contains three different capers or heists. So I was having a lot of fun with the world and coming up with more and more stories. So I just decided to let it rip.
as you said, Ray Carney, we know this man over 30 years at the completion of Cool Machine. And that is fascinating for us as readers to learn about the growth of this man, but for you, the growth of a character. And I'm curious as to what that is like of looking at it, especially in sort of a decade format.
Well, you know, if you commit to a kind of story or situation, you got to do it completely. So if I'm going to follow him over 30 years, who is he when he's 29 and who is he when he's 56? His kids are, you know, 1 year old, 2 years old in the first novel, and in the third novel, they've gone off to college and beyond, and he's an empty nester. So, you know, narrating the life of a person over 30 years, you have your ups and downs, and he definitely, as a reluctant fence, as you put it, is embracing and rejecting his criminal side over the course of three books until he comes to a final accommodation with it. So it means, like, if you're going to do it, you know, do it completely.
He is reluctant as a fence, but this is a character who we learn pretty early in the series who is constantly striving. He is continually striving.
He grew up poor. His father was a criminal, and that was a sort of model for manhood. But he rejects that, you know, in high school and college, and gets educated. Opens up his furniture store. He's very proud of that. But there is part of him that says, you know, let's do some crimes. And in the final book, you know, there was a reckoning with what that means to be a criminal and want to and have this dark side. Why is he doing it 25 years later? Does he have to, or does it fulfill some sort of psychological need? So he's sort of circling all those different ideas.
Did you know that even from the beginning of what the answer was to that question of whether that was something that he needed to do financially or psychologically?
I think once I, you know, got to the end of Harlem Shuffle, the first book, I realized that before I could go on to the next book, I should probably plot out the second and third books and have an idea of the major movements, you know, not all the characters, not all the details, but where's he ending up? You know, is he alive at the end? Is he dead? Is he in a place of hope or despair? And so, once I finished Harlem Shuffle, I was writing toward the final couple of pages of Cool Machine. And I think, you know, some people just make up their books as they go along. The muse like floats through the window and guides their fingers, but I'm definitely an outliner and I have to know where I'm taking these, what the final destination is. So, I tried to figure out as much as I could before I started writing the second book.
But it also tells us, and I assume you have to know this, the character of the character in the sense of who this person is. And I think in Rick Carney, a very empathetic character.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to follow someone for 1,100 pages if they're, a totally despicable criminal. So I think we can see ourselves, you know, in part of his, you know, part of his behavior. He is not a hardened criminal. He's fallen into this lifestyle and trying to figure out whether he wants to escape or stay in it. But, hopefully if I'm doing my job right, you can see yourself in his shoes and root for him. You know, you want him to succeed and figure things out.
What do you see your job as being? You say, if I've done my job right, what do you see your job as being?
Job one is not write, don't write a crappy book. So I think people will say, like, this a novel has to be political. Does it have to be this or that? No, I think the novel just has to not be bad. I like to have characters who have weird jobs, you know, a fence, a elevator inspector and the intuitionist, a cleaner up of zombies in zone one. Mm-hmm. And if I, you know, choose these different characters, male, female, they do this, they do that, and make them real for the reader, then I've accomplished my goal. And also, if it's not bad, To go back to that, as long as it's not bad, I feel, pretty good about things.
Who makes that distinction? You have said that the mission of an artist is not to make crappy art. So how do you do that, and how much of a challenge is that?
I've been doing it for 25 years, and I think I know when I've set out what I wanted to do, and I haven't slacked. I haven't, been cheap with the characters. I've fulfilled my mission for me. Now, does that mean other people will agree? I can't control that, but I feel at this point, if I've fulfilled my ambitions for a work, there'll be some people who come along for the ride. They may hate zombies. They may hate crime fiction and only like, say, my nonfiction book about the world series of poker. So they might not come along for every book. But I think most artists think that if they nail the poem, nail the painting, nail the film, then other people will come along.
And that certainly has been the case in your career. But again, you go back to how eclectic it's been, which seems like a wonderful freedom that many authors feel that they have to write similarly to continue with that success, but you've avoided that.
Well, I think if you're doing the same thing over and over again, you're not challenging yourself, and definitely I would get bored. The Ray Carney stories are, 1,100 pages of one character, three books. I was not done with him, but definitely if you're, I think, going over the same territory over and over again, I would definitely get bored by that. And so switching up genres, find different kinds of stories, different kinds of things, the challenging makes the work live for me.
So when it comes to Ray Carney, as you say, it's been 30 years, and in this novel we're looking at him in the 80s, and that's fascinating, especially in comparison to the earlier novels, because it's what a character goes through, it's what we all went through of living through the 80s, and just how disruptive and odd a decade that was, although we could probably say that about most decades.
Sure. I mean, I definitely want to capture a recognizable 80s. The 70s in New York City were a time of hardship. The city was bankrupt and crime was at an all-time high. So we're coming back to Ray's story in 1981. There's a new mayor, Ed Koch. There's a lot of development going on. Wall Street is coming back. So what does that mean, in the life of a city to have these ups and downs? What does it mean for a businessman who, depends on the economic health of the city and its customers. So I really do want to capture that and also figure out different moments in New York City 80s history that I can use to illuminate his character and the other characters.
You think of the beginning of that decade and as it progresses of Reaganism and greed is good, and then by the end of that decade, the city dealing with the AIDS epidemic and still coming into yet another chapter.
Another recession and hard times, the rise of the AIDS crisis, the continued advance of the homeless problem, the crack epidemic. And so, the book ends in 1986, and definitely it's before Black Monday, the crash in 87. But we know as readers and people who lived through that time that the city's going to go through another bad patch. So whenever you're up, there are definitely forces arrayed to bring you down again.
Tell me about the dedication of this particular novel.
There's an expletive, and it's a New York freaking city, I guess you could say. I've written a few books, and I definitely have dedicated them to my friends and family, and I was running out of people to dedicate it to. So why not the city that is a main character in the book that has given me so much and has really made me the person and writer I am. I keep coming back to New York City as a subject, as a locale. So it was time and perhaps overdue to Salute the City.
You just said something. You sort of walked right into what I wanted to talk to you about, which is this idea of the city being a character. How do you feel about that notion? We hear it in fiction a lot, of the city being a character, going back to Ulysses and Joyce. So what is it? How do you feel that, about that? Because it is about the city, but also it shows the many facets of a huge, sprawling place.
It has. It's always annoyed me. I've always found a kind of a lazy formulation. But you know, halfway through Harlem Shuffle, I was like, "Damn, dag nabbit!" You know, the city is a character, and so I sort of had to lean into it. It was happening anyway. But if you're narrating the life of the city, then you're trying to figure out how it works over 30 years. In the same way, I'm trying to figure out how Ray Carney works over 30 years, and so. Despite my reticence, I had to lean into it. I had no choice.
The name of the new novel is Cool Machine, and it is the third volume in Colson Whitehead's trilogy. And do you enjoy this process, maybe not so much of talking about the book, but of seeing it go out into the world, doing events, talking to readers, hearing from readers?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel I'm very lucky, and definitely when I do a bookstore event at night, you know, I realize the sacrifice people are making after a long day of work, and they have a lot on their plate, and they'll come to a bookstore or come to a lecture hall, and they're curious about the book. I think in this case, you know, I've met people who have picked up the first book and the second book, and you know, they've been asking when the third one's coming out, and so it's a different thing when it's a series, because you know, I'm lucky that people liked Ray and liked his earlier adventures, and they want to see how it ends up. So that's really delightful, and I'm glad that I can go out and talk to readers and see folks as I support the book.
An Evening with Colson Whitehead takes place on Thursday night at Universal Preservation Hall in Saratoga Springs, New York, an event sponsored by Northshire Bookstore. 8 p.m. is the start time, and you can find out more at northshire.com. The brand new novel, the third in the trilogy, is Cool Machine, a novel by Colson Whitehead. Colson, thank you so much for spending time with us. Best of luck with the new book, and we look forward to seeing you in town this week.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'll see you soon.
Again, An Evening with Colson Whitehead takes place on Thursday night at UPH in Saratoga Springs, presented by Northshire Bookstore. You can find out more at northshire.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.